Chapter 14. More questions. Tom stood up.
Oh, he gave them to me to look after, he said quickly.
When?
In Rome, I think, before he went to Palermo.
He took a step back and pulled off one of his shoes, then picked it up in both hands.
What was he going to do?
Marge said, with wide eyes.
Why did he give them to you?
He wondered why she had looked in the box, but did not ask her.
He said if anything ever happened to him, he wanted me to have his rings.
He was holding the shoe in both hands now. How he would do it went quickly through his head. He would hit her on the head with the heavy wooden bottom part of the shoe, then pull her out and throw her body into the canal. He would tell everyone that she had fallen on the wet steps there and hit her head. She looked down at the box.
Then Dickie was going to kill himself.
He was silent for a moment, realizing her meaning.
Yes, he said. I suppose if you look at it that way, the rings, they make it more likely.
Why didn't you say anything about it before?
I think I forgot about them. I put them away so they wouldn't get lost, and I never thought of looking at them again.
You had better tell Mr. Greenleaf and the police.
Tom looked at her. She was about to cry. This was the first moment that she had allowed herself to think that Dickie was probably dead, he realized. He dropped the shoe, put his foot back into it, and went to put his arms round her. He could smell her perfume. The Stradivari, probably.
Maybe he did kill himself then, he said.
Yes,
she said into his shoulder. Then she turned suddenly, her eyes filled with tears, and went quickly back up the stairs. She was too upset to speak. He sat down on the sofa. He felt as tired as he had after he had killed Freddie Miles or after Dickie in San Remo. He had been so close to killing her. He remembered his cool thoughts of throwing her in the canal and thought of the words he would say to Mr. Greenleaf. He heard his own voice saying,
I stood there on the steps calling to her, but I wasn't sure she'd hurt herself. I thought it was a joke.
And inside, he would be calm because his story was good. So good that he would come to believe it himself. But what frightened him was that he had already done it twice before. He could tell himself that he had not wanted to murder them, but he had murdered them. Of course he felt regret. What was happening to him? What had happened? He had to face Mr. Greenleaf with the rings tomorrow. He would have to tell him the same story that he had told Marge. He started to think about it again, adding more information. He imagined Dickie taking off his rings and giving them to him, and his voice saying,
Listen, Tom, don't tell anyone about this.
Marge rang Mr. Greenleaf at 8:30 the next morning. They arranged to meet him in his hotel room at 9:30 and traveled there by gondola. It was another cold, wet day. Mr. Greenleaf opened the door for them, and Tom saw a short, fat man of about 35 standing by the window. He must be the private detective.
This is Alvin McCarron,
Mr. Greenleaf said.
He's come straight from the airport. This is Miss Sherwood and Tom Ripley.
Tom felt McCarron looking at him.
So you're a friend of Richard's?
He asked.
We both are, said Tom.
They all sat down round a table at the far side of the room. Marge took the rings from her purse and gave them to McCarran. Then, Tom repeated the same story he had told Marge the night before. The detective listened carefully, with a face that was hard to read. McCarran asked about the time and date he had given the rings to him, and if Dickie had been drunk.
"No, he drinks very little," Tom replied. "He told me not to mention the rings to anyone, and of course I agreed. I put them in an old box that I have and forgot about them."
The detective looked at him silently for a moment, and Tom waited, his body ready for a difficult question or even an accusation.
"And is he the kind of man to lend you the rings for a short time?"
McCarran said.
"No,"
Marge said before Tom could answer.
"I can't imagine Dickie without his rings."
"And what do you think, Mr. Ripley?"
the detective said, staring at him.
"I'm afraid I agree with Miss Sherwood that it looks as if he's killed himself," Tom replied.
The detective then went on to ask him and Marge questions. When had they both last seen Dickie? What about the murder of Freddie Miles? He asked about the checks, but both Tom and Marge told him that they did not believe Dickie had forged them. Then McCarran stood up and said to Tom,
"Would you mind coming downstairs with me, if you have a few minutes?"
Tom followed him downstairs and into the reception area.
"Is this the way they do it?" he thought. "A quiet word and then an accusation. Then, after that, he'll give me over to the Italian police?"
"Shall we go in here?"
McCarran said, and led him into the coffee bar.
"I wanted to talk to you about Richard alone," he said. "What kind of man is he?"
Was McCarran going to approach his arrest like this? Or did he want an opinion on Dickie that Dickie's father and girlfriend could not give him?
"He wanted to be a painter," Tom replied, "but he wasn't very good. He acted like he didn't care, but I think Italian life was making him unhappy. And things were difficult with Marge."
"How do you mean?"
"She was in love with him, and he wasn't in love with her. He was never going to marry her, but Marge wouldn't give up. I think that's why Dickie left Mangibello. He told me this in Rome when I saw him. He seemed nervous and said that, after the Miles murder, he didn't want to see Marge. He was worried she would come to Rome when she heard about it." McCarran drank some of his coffee.
"Why do you think he was nervous after the Miles murder?"
"Because they had been good friends," Tom explained, "and Freddie had been killed just a few minutes after leaving his house."
"Do you think Richard killed Freddie?"
"No, I don't. He had no reason."
"Do you think that Richard was the kind of man who could kill someone?"
Tom frowned for a moment, like someone trying hard to discover the truth.
"I never thought about it," he said finally. "I don't know what kind of people are likely to kill someone, but I've seen him angry."
"When?"
Tom talked about the 2 days in Rome when Dickie had moved out of his apartment to avoid phone calls from friends and strangers. At the same time, he had grown more and more unhappy about his painting. He described Dickie as a proud young man who was angry with his father and did not want to work in the family business. His moods changed very quickly, Tom explained, being nice to strangers and then suddenly angry with friends for no reason.
"It would explain a lot if he had killed Freddie Miles, wouldn't it?"
"Yes," Tom said. "Everything."
"Well, this is only my first day of work,"
McCarran said with a smile. I haven't looked at the police report in Rome. I'll probably want to talk to you again after I've been there.
Tom stared at him. It seemed to be over. Are you going to Rome today? He asked.
Yes, in a couple of hours, with Mr. Greenleaf.
Do you speak Italian?
Not very well, but I can read it. My French is better, McCarran said, as if it were not important.
It was very important, Tom thought. He could not imagine McCarran getting all the information he needed from Roverini. Neither would he be able to talk to the doorman at the apartment in Rome. McCarran finished his coffee and stood up.
Knowing Dickie, what places do you think he might go if he wanted to hide? He asked.
Well, I know he likes Italy best. He also likes Greece, and all of Spain is a possibility, I suppose.
I see,
McCarran said, suddenly looking tired.
Well, thank you, Mr. Ripley. I have your address and phone number if I need to speak to you again.